근데 쉐디 아니 지나 미다과 세지다 미다과 세다 네 치워 미다과 세 안디고 아니 네 미다과다 치워 미다과 거셔야지 아니 지간도 되네 마저다데 진 데베링라 아니 지게 저리가 세오레스 안디고 마셔야
Good afternoon. So today we're going to talk about impermanence, and impermanence in particular in the context of this life that we have, the impermanence of our life. And then moreover, we're going to look at how best to spend what remains of this life, how to live a meaningful life. So that in brief is what we're going to look at today.
And the Ganesh Lagore Lana Chisan Mubo, Dujigi Chue, Ganeshine, and Chasan Midaparez or Midaparez. Midaparez, the Karsuosene, and Dujigi Chue, Ganeshine, Guda, Kinjile, Dene, Denema, Guda, Kinjile, Dene, Dene, Denema, Juhojo, Juju, and Tamalia, and Kichiki, Jijoya, Mabachar, Juhojo, Denechilia.
In general, when we hear this term impermanence, we can think of a couple of synonyms, so impermanence, or functioning things, compounded phenomena. So these are synonyms. So generally, when you think about impermanent phenomena, we think of functioning things, so phenomena that produce a result, that produce have a function. Or another way to express it would be in terms of compounded phenomena, so phenomena that have come together due to causes and conditions. So these phenomena, whether we think of them as impermanent or functioning things or compounded phenomena, they all change. They are impermanent, which means they change momentarily, moments by moments by moment. So this is a general understanding of the term impermanence.
Me.
The term impermanent is the opposite of the term permanent. So impermanent, we've just heard, is defined as something that changes momentarily, where something that is permanent does not change momentarily. And this is because it doesn't come from causes and conditions. And it's so something that is impermanent does not change momentarily.
Angazu banana tomba siorwa, isn't it taquares, banana tomba de taquares, cousin coat, banana tomba de gudan kin le de omare, called you at unit her omare, hotaran kidina tomba janese de erwa.
We can talk about empty space. We say this is permanent because it didn't come about in dependence on causes and conditions, it doesn't change momentarily, it's always just empty space. Whereas impermanent phenomena, functioning things, compounded phenomena, these did come about or do come about in dependence on causes and conditions. So coming about in dependence on causes and conditions means that they change in their nature, and that moreover they change momentarily.
And you would many a chunyo give or tampon. That is the yelling in the yaya, cherro, chambucha, dene, lomaki, dene cotton, and do gene lomopi in leather, and lomadi pa, yanchi, sea watcha, ma, sa, ni yaga di kichu kam ni ma sa den nan dombo khorong gi din na den kam bu cha ne ga sam ji lya ma ri ne an mya wa cha lu korwa che na din ye che na ko ngan ju gi thong ya gi ti xin di ge cha sa du sun ji gi wo ru du wa de ni ne ni le ni du de zu chu ji chu ji na ga ma na ga ma gi wo ru ko ra se ngan ju gi den ne ga ma na ga ma gi wo ru wa de ngan ju gi ji gi gi wo ru de ngan ju ha gu wo ma le ni ne du che den ne che na ya ji che ya che che cha
The vast majority of phenomena that we observe are impermanent phenomena or functioning things or compounded phenomena. So those synonyms. To think then about how, so these are then defined as changing momentarily. The common illustration that's easy to understand is you can think of any illustration of flora. So generally, flora will come from a seed that has been planted. And so a seed is planted in soil, and in a soil that is suitable to that type of plant. And then further conditions need to come together, such as water and warmth. And then over time, that seed will sprout and grow. And it won't only grow as far as being a sprout, but it will develop into a plant. And from this, maybe flowers will come and leaves will come. And then it will continue to change. The leaves, the flowers will die, the leaves will fall off in the winter, and perhaps and eventually the plant will wither and die. So this kind of very coarse impermanence we have a lot of experience of observing. But what is meant by impermanence is whilst it does include coarse impermanence, it specifically relates to momentary change, subtle impermanence. And this is something we don't observe or generally even think of. But impermanence specifically replies to the momentary change of impermanent phenomena. And with take a tree, for example, that has gone through this long process of growth, and then eventually it withers and dies, and perhaps then in strong wind it's blown over. Then over time, through encouraged or sped up by the activity of the elements, that tree will just melt away into nothing. It will just become soil, and it will completely vanish as if it was never there. Where we see this very easily is with farmers who are planting their crops, because they make great effort to plant and then care for the crop, and they'll be observing it to make sure it's growing well and has all the conditions that are required, and then they will harvest that crop, and it will, from the outside perspective, like from us driving past, it will be as if nothing was there. So we see very clearly the impermanence of such phenomena.
Yang tinigi ha mogwa ina yangje tabya gi yangya la ga deri ji ma re jisari deri ma je na ga to gyo ra gwa deri me je na ko ma sam char ne ri sa ge je la yangje tabya gi so na deri me na tin ta ya me ro wa me du yangje ji ya yo ma re ge me na je bu lo ja me ba re jisang ga to gyo ra gwa re jisna din ni du ma tab ji ri ni me wa cha ro ha go sen ha go yong du ga to o da ri yangje tabya gi deri so en de ge da de ne ma nya ne ya bu ma je ba na An mau bana yang kita lagi macam tu, yang kita tak boleh sembuh. Di ni samlai itu, soal ni kita jadi je. Jadi je bahasa, jadi cakap yang banyak orang, kau mewah cakap itu, yang kita tak je. An yang kita biasa tang tang itu, macam soal tu gua lupa.
If we are particularly ignorant city types. And we drive past a field with, let's say, a large crop of wheat. We think, oh, fantastic, there's plenty of wheat. And then we go on with our lives just thinking, oh, there's plenty of wheat. I saw it, and it will always be there. And this would come from not understanding impermanence or agriculture at all. And we think, well, nothing to be done. Our supply of wheat, for example, this is secure. Whereas what is happening back at the farm is of course quite different. The crops are impermanent, they'll be harvested and or they'll wither and die, and they'll need to be replanted. But if we haven't understood the situation well, as particularly ignorant city types, then we will not prepare, and the next year we'll have no food. However, on the other hand, a farmer is not likely to make such an error. A farmer will understand the impermanence, understand the causes and the conditions that need to come together so as to have a successful crop every year. And the farmer will prepare as best as she can to get all the conditions within her control together and make sure that they come together at the appropriate time and the appropriate quantity to ensure that the crop will be bountiful again this year. So the key point here is that if one is aware of the impermanent nature of the phenomenon, then one can plan and prepare and utilize it well. If one is not aware of the impermanent nature of the phenomenon, one's not going to plan. One will just assume it is always going to be there.
其他南部呢，俺是米地几呢？这个阿米种好拿了怕，差的，但南部好像差的都够了。俺那这个，春秋就嘛都要买了吧？今年俺这阿米种好拿了，切了，然后切了，那阿米种好嘛，吃了点阿米麻鸡。今年俺这，对呀，切了，这切了，差的，过了就是说说，俺就老讲，接着拿，说说两个来，然后吃啥的，这家伙的嘛，我来吃，接着吃。 接着呢，啊，嘛，这当伯爷爷切切，对嘛，对呢，俺嘛落的切切切，就是女伯，当伯穷穷搞不了女伯穷穷嘛都要嘛了，对呢，就女伯切切切，那女伯吃上桌上呢，啊嘛，就呢，女伯的个，穷穷女伯穷穷着呢，对呢，经过吃的，那刚才我们就两个都洗完了也是，洗，对呢洗呢，碰不着，烧完了白完了，那面茶当了，可能那接着，对呢，到我们团里面把吃了过了，对呢，给接着俺自己没得给。
We think of the state of sentient beings, whether humans like ourselves or with animals, then that the life starts at the point of conception. And at the point of conception, the being's form is particularly tiny. But though quite quickly it starts to grow a little bigger, a little bigger. And then birth comes. And then if it's a human, it's whatever size a newborn is. And then it continues to grow. And after some years of care, then the young child is able to go to kindergarten and will continue to grow and grow and eventually grow into adulthood and graduate from school and then maybe graduate from university and then enter into adulthood and continue to go through life but continuously aging until the young person suddenly is middle-aged. And then that middle-aged person is it once again redefined as old. And then life comes to an end. Then, just like with we've seen with plants or with a tree, life comes to an end, and then the physical form just melts away, dissolves as if it had never been present. In Buddhist philosophy, or the view of Buddhism, then flora are not considered life forms. They aren't considered to have life, so or to have mind, to say it literally. Only beings, sentient beings such as humans and animals and so forth, are considered to have mind. So what were these two streams, such as that of flora and that of fauna? Fauna and flora have in common is that they are impermanent. They change moment by moment. So they both can be said to be impermanent. But when we talk about the presentation of death, the impermanence of life, then it only refers to beings who sentient beings. And the period of life, this is measured from the point of conception until breath ceases. This topic that we're discussing today, this impermanence of life, it is a particularly important topic to think about. And the way to understand its importance is to refer back to the analogy of the farmer who will think about, will plan how best to utilize his situation in terms of he's planted a crop, how to make sure that that the crop grows well, turns out well, and is utilized to the best of its ability, and then he prepares to ensure that the following year there's another successful crop. So similar to that illustration where the farmer understands the impermanence of his crop and thereby will utilize it well whilst it's there and plan for the future, we too need to think about the impermanent phenomenon that is this life that we have. And we need to think about this well so as to gain clarity that this life is impermanent, it will end. And the purpose of thinking in this way is so that through seeing that this time that we have is finite, we will then be encouraged to plan well and to utilize what remains of this life well, just like the farmer with their crop. And a starting way that one could reflect on the impermanence of this life is to think back to the distant past. The world has had many beings, both human and non-human, but none of these beings from ancient times are still around. They have all died. And we can say that with complete certainty. So we know life ends. No life lasts indefinitely. life ends.
If we take two different situations, let's say for some reason, right now we had to leave here. We had to not just leave here, but we had to leave this country and we had to go somewhere else. Somewhere that we were being sent and we had no control over where we were going. Immediately our mind would become very concerned and distressed because this has happened to us completely unexpectedly. We haven't planned or prepared. We haven't made any preparations what will happen to our home or to with our friends and family, etc. Suddenly we've been sent off elsewhere. So great mental anguish is going to happen. Is going to dominate our minds if that were to happen in this very moment. But on the other hand, if we were to be sitting here thinking, you know, maybe next year I'd love to go on holiday somewhere. And if I think of all the wonderful places in the world, I think I'd like to go to this particular place. And then we set our hearts on going to on holiday to a particular place, and then we think about what we need to do to get there. So how much we need to save, what bookings we need to make, what visas we need, etc. And because it's next year, we plan and we prepare. So in both situations, we're leaving Australia. But the one is causing great mental anguish. The other we're quite excited about. We know what's happening, and we've planned, and we've prepared well, and we have expectations that it will go well. So this analogy then we can liken to the situation that we all find ourselves in, that we are here and we are alive, but our life is impermanent and it will end. And this is something that we generally don't think about, but here we are being encouraged to actively think about it and think about it in some depth and some detail. And the reason for this is that this life will end, this is certain. And when it ends, we will go in one of two directions, either remain in a happy migration or fall into a suffering migration. That's it. That's what will happen. And that is certain. And on one hand, that's actually nothing to worry about, nothing to be concerned about, because that is just the natural process. What is alive right now will die. Nothing to be concerned about, nothing to overly worry about. That is the natural situation of things. That being said, for those who avoid thinking about this, who don't make any plans or preparations for the time of death and what will follow the time of death, then when that time unexpectedly comes, their mind is likely to be greatly concerned. They're likely to experience tremendous anguish, fear about what may come, reflect on the life lived, and have regrets and concerns and doubts. On the other hand, if one gains certainty about one's death, and that there's only one of two directions, and that those two directions, whichever direction one goes in, whether it's a happy or a suffering migration, is dependent on the causes that we create. If one gains certainty of that, then in whatever remains of this life, one will make sure this life doesn't go to waste. One will make sure that this life is used in a meaningful way. And then, when the time comes to exchange this body for a new, fresh, subtle body again, one will have a relaxed mind, a spacious mind, knowing that this life was lived well, the causes were created to ensure that a good rebirth will follow. So in this way, one will leave this body with a very different state of mind.
If we reflect on the impermanence of this life, then we will come to understand that this life will end, and we will then take rebirth again. And where we take rebirth is either going to be in a suffering migration or again in a happy migration. And where that is actually in our hands. We have control over where we are going to be reborn, or rather we have great influence over where we are going to be reborn. So we have no choice, no control over death, in that death will come. It cannot be averted indefinitely. Death will come. But we do, if we plan and use this life well, we do have influence over where we will be reborn in our future life.
And
When you think then about the impermanence of this life, then it becomes really evident, really apparent, the need to utilize what remains of this life well to ensure that our future lives go well. And what is it that we can do that has an impact on our future lives? Well, the reality is, no matter what great abundance of material resources we have, none of these we can take with us. There's no special pass that we can buy at the time of death to ensure a good rebirth. Nor, no matter how good the quality of our friends and our loved ones and how kind and well they care for us in this life, when death comes, they cannot help us then either. The only thing that helps at the time of death is the virtue that we have accumulated in this life. So therefore, our preparation for our future lives is the practice we engage in this life. The more we practice, the more we develop in terms of virtue and our spiritual minds, the more we develop the minds of the Buddha Dharma within ourselves, the greater the causes, the greater the quantity as well as the strength of the causes that will lead to good results in our future lives. The weaker we practice, the less impact those causes will have on our future lives. So therefore here, there are two key points. The preparation that we make for our future lives is our practice. And the greater the strength of our practice, the greater the causes for good rebirths are that we accumulate. So what is meant by practicing the Buddha Dharma? Well, it's not something we can go somewhere and buy. It's not something that anyone can sell. If someone makes a promise that if you buy something they're selling and this will make all the difference for your next life, don't believe that. What impacts our next life is how we've changed our mind. How we've developed our mind. That is what is meant by practice. Developing our mind, training our mind. So practicing the Buddha Dharma, this means training the mind, transforming the mind. This is the meaning of practicing the Buddha Dharma. So whenever we hear about Dharma practice, It's important to be aware that this refers specifically to developing our mind. The reason for this is, if we think of harmful behavior, let's say take physical behavior, where there's a physical conflict between people, for example, or if someone steals, this only happens because of a motivating mind and intention. So people only engage in harmful behavior because of the intending mind. Similarly with speech, when people tell lies or speak in a harsh manner, this only happens because there is a mind of intention, a motivating mind. Without mind, the body does nothing. The body just sits very still if the mind is not motivating movement. Speech doesn't follow if the mind is not motivating speech. So therefore, the mind is what leads to the accumulation of non-virtue, as well as therefore the accumulation of virtue. And if that's not clear enough, then this can be understood in relation to a car. The cars you have parked outside, they're going to stay there forever. They're going to go nowhere unless someone gets in them and drives them. So that is very similar to ourselves. It's a motivating mind that leads to the physical and verbal activity. So therefore, when we talk about Dharma practice, it's not a physical activity, a verbal activity. Is primarily a mental activity.
That in Ashe, the Lu Yukon, Shan, Roger, Pando, Jada, and then I took it, Tik, Shania, and Tikia, which is a wish, Mikovus, and Dongan, Nomuria, what there, the Dinichevan, Michasan, Yawat Koya, Yuro. She's not Dinik, you had the Yankargos in it. Mountain Sim Nangloria, Shania, Pembe Simba, and Tivia Samba, Samba Sambuchi, my Jeva in that. And don't give them duty, Yapoli, my Kishi, Shima, Tisang Nangi, Samu Delia, Samba Sambuchi, Nicole, Kishi, Yahushi, Colia, Robochi, and Colia, Pemba Jugin, Sabbath, Samu Jena, D. Samu de Kinjin, Manjuki Kishi, Nakishi, Milia, Shidu, Yahushi. Don't get them, you know, you have to do it. Similarly,
any activity that we engage in, physical activity that we engage in to help others, to bring benefits to others, to ease the distress and suffering of others, any physical activity we do in that way is motivated by a mind. Verbal expressions that are motivated to bring benefit to others, either through guiding or teaching or training others, or through offering support to others who are troubled, this is motivated by a mind. So therefore, the mind is of primary importance. If one has developed a kind heart, a gentle heart, then this will be apparent to everyone you meet just through your facial expression, without necessarily doing or saying anything. This will glow from one. And then when one speaks to others, one will show this inner quality, quality that one has developed in one's mind. And one will naturally want to help others and engage in every opportunity one has to help others. So therefore, all virtuous activities, physical as well as verbal, come about due to being motivated by a kind heart, a gentle mind. This, though, is also the case for any behavior that brings harm. So any behavior that promotes conflict or disharmony, this comes about independent on a harsh mind, a selfish attitude, a self-cherishing attitude. So therefore, when we talk about engaging in activities that bring help or bring harm to others, whilst these are usually expressed physically or verbally, when we talk about a Buddhist practice, we are primarily talking about developing our minds and acting under the influence of the mind that we have developed, a kind heart, a gentle heart.
If we take a moment then to look at our own minds and see what direction our mind tends to naturally go in. So we can think of, if we may be going about in a day, and none of us will have the wish to get angry, to get frustrated, to get annoyed. None of us set out in the day with such a motivation that today I'm going to get angry and make problems for whomever I meet. Yet, when we meet a certain situation, that mind naturally arises within us. We have no wish, there was no intention, but it naturally arose within us. Likewise, if we see something that we find desirable, naturally the mind of desire arises for this object of beauty. So this comes about due to our strong habituation to these minds, minds such as anger and frustration and annoyance, and minds such as desire and attachment. Due to the strength of our habituation to these minds, they naturally, spontaneously arise within us. On the other hand, the wish to help others, the wish to benefit others, this, though, tends not to arise so spontaneously within us. Certainly not with people that we don't know, that we don't feel a close affinity with. So such a response tends to arise with much more difficulty. And this, too, is due to habituation, but in this case, a far weaker habituation.
What we see in this, what has just been mentioned, is that it's due to habituation to certain ways of thinking that these arise within us readily, almost with very little cause. Whereas other minds, we need to make far greater effort to generate them. And all that differentiates these minds, those that arise more easily and those with greater difficulty, is the strength of our habituation or our familiarity to these minds. So just like if you think of a world-class athlete or sports person, or a skilled performer, or perhaps yourselves in your place of work. At one time, when one was starting out, then the person had a motivation to become proficient, to become skilled in a particular area. But at that point, they certainly were not. But through training with great effort and diligence, then they became a world-class athlete or sports person or a skilled performer, or you're all able to do your jobs very well. And that came about due to developing habituation and skill. And this is the same process with the mind. So the way to develop one's way of thinking is, for example, when you wake up in the morning, the simplest of meditations is to remind oneself that I only want to experience happiness. I don't want any problems or difficulties at all. This is easy. We all know this is true for ourselves. Then we remind ourselves that this is not unique to me. This is something that I share with every other living being. I share this wish to experience only happiness with everyone in my family, with everyone that I feel closeness and affinity to, everyone in my place of work, all those that I will meet and all those that I won't meet. Every sentient being, human or animal, shares this wish, this desire to experience only happiness. And in the same way, as I don't want others to bring, to impact my happiness in a negative way or to bring suffering towards me, I will not bring problems and difficulties into the lives of others. So this is something easy to understand. It's not something profound or complex. And if we think about this again and again, doing so, we will create a habituation to this way of thinking, a familiarity with this way of thinking. And this means this way of thinking will start to arise in us naturally, spontaneously, due to this habituation. So in this way, we can slowly start to change our way of thinking through training our mind repeatedly over a sustained period, just like we have done in whatever work you do that you've become skilled in, or skilled athletes and performers, they too have gone through the same kind of process.
Deni ki tāwa ina, ane lūngā ki tōne shēnliyā pēmpi ki māngā rūp tūgō re. Che sā, sōsū ki deni ki sāma tāngā che, sāma sāmbā tāngā che chewa ina, sōsū liyā gāwū chi kērēn rōpa re, ngō shīngbā, māngā rōpa chi kērēn, ngō shīngbā, jindā gāwū chi māngā che kērūwa. Sōsū ki tā, mīti ki ngā rā gāwū chi ki mīndū sāma che, sōsū liyā chōlā che, dīne nāja mīdī sū gāvū sū tūgū rā bēsī nā gāvū sū tūgū mārē, mī mārē, sēm jēn dūnruo yī nā sū sū gāvū sū tūgū mārē. Chī sā, tā mī rō jī nā sū sū wāng chī yudhī gāvū rā tā tīgī xē nā tā gāvū yīndō gā jīg rī tē, nā gāngsam jīg lī yā gō gāb rā tū, nā sū sū lī yā mā gāvā jīg rū gū rā. Tā sū sū kē sāmbā sāngbī tō nē, jām jē sāmbā kō tū lē tīgī chū nā, dūngā xē nā sāmbē jām jē sāmbā pā jē wā chē, nā tō sū lūngā yī sūm jī gō nē xē lī yā gā jē pēmbā gā jē chū tū dī chē bā yī nā. Nyema gobu me ne midi ki tsu gobu chaya da. Semje dunro chi ne soso gobu chaya da. Bene jiro chi na da te semje soso pa ya gobu che. Bene soso tonga do ne ane yugu chi yugu che gobu chi le yungu rwa. Da chi di nga la gobu chi ki minu sene chi di liya pa jing zho nga je dora yu chin sene jema ne midi tonga do ne ma chi di ki pa ap che ne pa dwe ne nga zo so jia li ria che gobu rwa. Chisna soso yu ki gobu che bae na soso yu sangbo che bae na soso yu nga ki nam kyu di ya gobu chi li go re. Lāgu nē jū pāshō dīlē mīshāndā yīnā sīm jū dūnā chāsān gāvū chā yīngwā. Chāsān gāvū chā kōntō gāna nā ngā tū tūgī gāvū lē yīngwā. Chāsān chē dīlē sāmbā yīnā sōsū kē sāmbā sāmbū kī chē bā yīnā mīshāndā yā gāvū sū yīt yādā. Mīshāndā kī sōsū lē gāvū chē yīdū, mīshāndā sōsū gāvū chīnā o dā sōsū yīnā jīvū yīngwū rūwā yīngwū rūwā. Tā sōsū kē kōntō chā nā chī kī sāmbā dūkchā kōlā nē bā kīyā sāmbā chā chē yīdū lūngā kī tō nā nāmbū dūkchā chā pāshō lā nē. 샹다디게 기우메바차 예 바니 기우메디 파조네 수응한지 동은 동은 넘주다 직 두자라 계시 두자 해와나 소소라이도 소소 기우메바차 근데 나신 이거 기우메바 쓰고 그랬지. 제자
The meditation then that has just been mentioned is something very easy to do and really doesn't require much analysis and therefore can be done very easily. And what brings power to it though is if one does so repeatedly over a sustained period, then habituation comes. And also through thinking about this, one will naturally start to think in some more detail and come to an ever greater understanding of what it means to be a good person, what it means to bring benefit into the lives of others, what it means to be a skillful person even in difficult circumstances. And so this through thinking in the way that has just been described and doing so repeatedly, one will start to think in more detail about this topic. And one will reflect on the times when we have helped others, when someone was in need or in distress, and we, without being made to do it or even having to generate the thought intentionally, we, from our own side, we wholeheartedly wanted to help this person. We wanted to reduce their distress. We wanted to reduce their suffering. Thinking like this will just, recalling what we've done, this will bring great joy to our mind. And this will serve as further encouragement to be a person who brings happiness and good into this world. And in this way, as we make our personality more gentle, more kind-hearted, then all those around us we will have close and harmonious relationships with. People will see us as a friend. They will see us as a person they want to be with. They will see us as someone they want to work with and help and assist whenever that is needed. And when we have problems and difficulties and we need to express that to someone, they will be much more receptive and less defensive about what we have to say because of the closeness that we have built up in our relationship. There's no being at all, whether human or animal, that wants conflict in their life. There's no one who wants disharmonious relationships. Even people that we observe who have harsh personalities, they only want to get on with others. They only want to have close and gentle relationships with others. And this is because of this inner wish to be happy. So when we're thinking like this, we'll see that there's no difference on a deeper level between ourselves and others. On a superficial level, sure, many differences. On a deeper level, we are all the same in wanting to experience happiness. Thinking like that immediately makes our mind wider, more spacious, more expansive. And this then is reflected in how we communicate with others. Our facial expression will be soft and gentle. Our tone will be one of love and kindness and concern for others, even when they are responding to us or talking to us in a harsh manner. And this is something that we would show naturally to people as well as even to animals. And where this, where I have experienced and have seen this happen is with animals who may be very fearful. Some dogs, for example, are very aggressive and they bark at strangers and are aggressive towards strangers. But just by showing them kindness over time, that relationship changes. And they don't see one anymore as a threat, but rather as a friend. And this works with animals. It certainly works with humans. And as we develop our mind in this way, and our mind becomes more spacious, broader, and more gentle, then love and kindness naturally arises within us. And then even when we encounter difficult situations where others are perhaps abusive towards us or angry towards us, we manage to respond in a kind and skillful and gentle manner because of this mental training we've been engaging in repeatedly over a sustained period.
Lunga Yusum Yukone Shell, never said Zaugin Chingbe, Sembe, some of the Yane, Tayata,
Through training one's mind in the way that I've described thus far, developing the thought that I will not harm others, will not harm others in any way at all, but I'll do whatever I can, whatever is within my ability to help others. The result that will come from this is one's own mind will become gentle and smooth. One's interaction thereby with others, physical and verbal interaction, will be gentle and kind. And the results will be the relationships we form with others. Firstly, those we spend most time with, such as our families. These relationships will become harmonious. And this comes about through reflecting that everyone that I will meet, all those I don't meet, all without exception are like me in wanting to experience only happiness. No one that I encounter today is hoping that I will bring harm and difficulties and problems into their lives. In fact, everyone that I meet today, they feel they have an abundance of problems and difficulties. They don't want me to add any more to them. And in this way, we make the commitment not to make the lives of others more difficult. We remind ourselves that just like when we meet others, we hope that they bring joy and light into our lives, so too do others have that hope when they meet us. And then we generate the wish, committing to only helping others, bringing benefits to others, ensuring that our behavior, at the very least, doesn't harm others, our verbal and physical behavior, but wherever we can, we help others. And thinking like this repeatedly over a sustained period will ensure, first, our mind becomes gentle and spacious. Secondly, those that we interact with most, such as our loved ones at home, as well as our broader family and our work colleagues, the people that we interact with the most, our relationship will become harmonious and gentle. And moreover, whomever we meet in any walk of life, we will immediately get on with them and we'll feel like we're meeting someone that is a close friend. And this all comes from training our mind repeatedly over a sustained period, developing this commitment not to bring any more harm or difficulty into the life of others, but rather to ease the burden, to ease the suffering that others are experiencing by only being of benefit to others.
Then 那你我就考完了这一切都，那你今天下班呢？就是计划啥吧，就是学习吧，就是。就是俺们这第，第二个的，养的养的就这里结巴呢。但俺们这个计划起码，但俺们这计划起码，一下就像伢子，这里的些活嘞，今天个这学起来这土呢，计划起码，俺们你们这新西瑞嘛，西亚太阳嘛嘞，西卓呢，就是俺今天个这些下班，今天计划起码的嘞，一下就像伢子吧嘞，是吧？ 那这点里啊，俺这个空了，凑合没想到嘞，内部几啊当，这个现在刚刚这些当，少学些啊当，这那个地方上啥玩意呢？你给俺那计划起码的啷个做？西周的，俺那俺做些，俺那刚刚嘛里过嘞，俺送的些，就吃着过嘞。就像今天咱，咱这俺做计划起码一下就做，但如果做，咱这俺做然后要的，然后要不然咱俺做了，搁这些然后要的是，俺做现在拼不住，现在，中国这些等到了。 给就住院的，俺说让我要的。你现在刚刚这些当，少就你不接的，俺说让我要的。现在你男女的，俺说是吧？就算你第一个女，一个男的，俺说一个男的，这不就一个全国了吧？现在你另外说的，结婚的，什么当的，什么的托的，他什么上坡去开去，俺弟弟给给为家伙去全国培养县里啊，卡拉、杜罗、县级托的，罗去，土白呢，弟弟确实过了，弟弟这边呢。
So it's my sincere hope that all of you will take the time every day, and hopefully many times in the day, to remind yourselves of this simple fact that all beings are the same as me, wanting to experience only happiness and to be free from pain and difficulty. And thinking about this more and more so that it starts to permeate one's way of thinking and thereby way of engaging with the world. And those of you who do engage in Buddhist practice, whether it's meditation or making offerings to the three jewels or circumambulation or recitation of mantras such as Om Mani Padme Hum, if you do so with such a motivation, great benefit will come. And if you develop this motivation even further, thinking that through this virtuous practice that I'm about to engage in, such as recitation of mantra or making offerings, through this virtue, may I lead all beings to a state completely freed from suffering, a state beyond samsara, liberated from samsara, a state of stable, lasting happiness. And in this way, generate an ever more powerful motivation, thinking of all sentient beings, and thinking about leading them to a state beyond samsara, a state of liberation. Then one's virtue from that same practice will be that much more powerful. And moreover, this motivation that I've been talking about developing, it is my wish that, or my hope that you don't only generate it before engaging in religious practices such as making offerings or reciting of mantra, but you generate this kind of motivation before engaging in your ordinary, your worldly activities as well. So those activities that one does at home or in one's place of work or in society. Because in this way, whatever one does, whether it's driving somewhere or other ordinary activities at home or at one's place of work, with such a motivation to ease the suffering that others experience, to only bring benefit and happiness into the lives of others, then whatever one does becomes a practice of the Dharma because of the motivating mind. And this is the key point about what is meant by Dharma practice or Buddhist practice. It's less about the physical activity or the verbal activity. It's primarily about the motivating mind. And therefore, everything we've been speaking about today is about mental development. It's not about physical or verbal behavior. It's about the motivating mind. And then, if one develops this motivating mind of wanting to bring benefit to others and not to harm, then in this way, one is creating powerful causes to ensure that in our future lives we attain good rebirths with good conditions and we can continue our spiritual progression, our development of our own inner well-being and our ability to bring greater happiness to others.
In this way then, when the time of death comes for us, then we can be sure of another good rebirth following. But if we look at our minds now with honesty and we see that a mind such as, for example, anger, this arises very easily within us. And we see that this is in the mind that takes very little effort to arise, and that it's we thereby bring without intending to do so, but we through our anger bring harm to others. Then, through the karma we create those moments, we are creating the causes for suffering in our future lives, causes that can lead to even to rebirth in the lower realms. So the key point here is, we right now, all of us here, have freedom. We have an opportunity in that it rests within our hands how we relate with others. It rests within our hands our own mental development. So therefore, how we spend the rest of this life. If we use this life in a virtuous and a meaningful way, or if we rather spend our life distracted by activities without being dominated by a virtuous mind. This is really up to us. We have freedom how we use this life, freedom how we develop our mind. And developing our mind, developing virtuous minds within us, this is the meaning of practice. This is the meaning of the Buddha Dharma. And this, too, is how we create causes for good rebirths in our future lives. So to really narrow this down into just a few sentences, what we've talked about today. So the one thing that I hope that you take home with you today is that the meaning of a Buddhist practice is developing our way of thinking. And the simplest meditation is to rise in the morning, generating the thought that I will not harm any being today. The very least, I will not bring harm to others. And moreover, whenever I have the opportunity and it's within my range of abilities, I will bring benefit into the lives of others. That is a very simple practice and something that everyone can do. And it's my hope that if you only take away one thing today, that you take that away with you. Okay. Then thank you, and we'll finish here then. Thank you very much.